No.
Maduro realizó tales afirmaciones en una reunión con la fracción parlamentaria del oficialista Partido Socialista Unido de Venezuela, en vísperas de la instalación de la Asamblea Nacional para el periodo 2022-2023 con Jorge Rodríguez como presidente.
Unamos esfuerzos, unamos fuerzas, que se active la Asamblea Nacional y si el año pasado brilló, este año 2022 la Asamblea Nacional ocupe el espacio de las luchas populares, de la movilización del pueblo, de la movilización de la clase obrera. La Asamblea Nacional sea la caja de resonancia de la denuncia, de los alertas, de los debates públicos.
La controvertida extensión de la llamada presidencia encargada de Guaidó sucede mientras este último está sin poder real en el país y con bajísimos niveles de popularidad. De hecho, Guaidó se proclamó presidente en una plaza en 2019 y con el apoyo de Estados Unidos, que le entregó vastos recursos bloqueados de Venezuela. Nancy Loco, información de Mahdi Yarbán, Hispan TV Noticias.
El presidente de la Asamblea Nacional de Venezuela, Jorge Rodríguez, explica ante los medios el cuantioso robo del dinero del pueblo que ha sido transferido a Juan Guaidó.
Más de $1,600 por minuto recibió Guaidó en el año 2021. Pero ayer, ustedes saben que cada cierto tiempo, con un profundo bostezo, la administración Biden abre una gaveta donde hay un modelo de tuit de reconocimiento, no sé qué, reconocemos la lucha, no sé qué cosa. Es el mismo tuit cada 6 meses, cada 4 meses. Llaman a un señor allá del Departamento de Estado. ¿En qué gaveta está? Aquí. Pero seguro, ¿no? Aquí no está. Búscala allá. Aquí está. Estaba sosteniendo una mesa aquí porque estaba desnivelada. Sacan el modelo de tuit y lo publican en la red. Reconocemos, etcétera. Y me imagino que seguirán así, no sé, reconociendo ya la monarquía, como dijo Ramos Alup, la monarquía de este señor. Pero lo importante de este tuit, que dice lo mismo siempre, es la parte final, porque Estados Unidos, su gobierno, a través de un comunicado del Departamento de Estado, dice que le han entregado a Juan Guaidó 1,9 mil millones, 1.900 millones, 119 millardos en asistencia humanitaria, económica, de desarrollo y de salud. En conclusión, si sumamos 1,9 millones más 1,9 millardos más 1,2 millardos, estamos hablando de 3.100 millones de dólares que estos ladrones han recibido. Para que ustedes tengan y el pueblo de Venezuela sepa una noción exacta del nivel de barbaridad, con esos 3.100 millones de dólares se hubieran podido comprar 442 millones de dosis de vacuna contra el COVID-19. Hubiéramos podido vacunar a toda América Latina y el Caribe con esa plata que esos ladrones se robaron. O, para utilizar otro ejemplo, con esa plata hubiéramos podido estar vacunando a las venezolanas y venezolanos contra el COVID-19 por 22 años. Solamente como ejemplo y por reducción al absurdo. Porque mientras estaban robando esa plata, confiaban y tenían la certeza de que el gobierno bolivariano del presidente Maduro no iba a lograr afrontar el inmenso reto que se le presenta a un país, combatir contra la más feroz pandemia que ha tenido la humanidad en 100 años, la del COVID-19, absolutamente bloqueado y sin acceso a ningún tipo de recursos.
Así llegamos al final de esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Nuestro más profundo agradecimiento a todos los medios y personas que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPad o en forma tradicional en www.kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
Told me, you know, we'll give you a day, we'll give you a week, however long it takes for you to accept our help to be healed and to become a child of God and denounce being gay.
Honoring the memory of Dr. Anonymous, coming up on the Rainbow Minute.
I got 3/4 of the way through several times and was like, well, I have no idea how this would end, so I have to start over. But one thing I know is I can't end a story without hope. Thank you.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Nicaragua's NGO Purge targets its oldest queer group. Gay Taiwanese movie sings out a universal love song and upending the artistic process with Amanda Kayback. All that and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Joe Bainline.
And I'm John Dyer V.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending August 28, 2021. The government of Nicaragua is aiming to shut down the country's oldest LGBTQ advocacy group. The Interior Ministry has asked the National Assembly to annul the legal nonprofit status of Fundación Xiquetzal and 14 other non-governmental organizations. President Daniel Ortega's Sandinista National Liberation Front is the controlling party in the assembly, so that body's likely to...
About the shape I'm in, I can't sing, I ain't pretty, and my legs are thin. But don't ask me what I think of you, I might not give the answer that you want me to. To God, I knew he'd understand. He said, stick by me and I'll be your guiding hand. But don't ask me what I think of you. I might not give the answer that you want me to.
And coming up next on the stream of freakradio.org, and probably at the archive, more likely, of the Huff website at huffsantacruz.org under latest and lost shows. All you fans of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, that's the show that you're listening to now. This is the January 6th, 2022 show, and we're kind of patching it together right before... Netcast time, and hopefully you'll enjoy it. It's got stuff from Berkeley, stuff from Watsonville. It's got probably a flashback or two, a bit from Santa Cruz. It's got a little bit of everything, and who knows, maybe a lot of nothing, but you be the judge. Here it is.
Tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs, they simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So let's begin with an account from Whip Him Into Shape, Wes White, as I sometimes call him when I'm not stumbling over my tongue. Contacted him earlier today at the HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom meeting, which we have every Thursday at the Sub Rosa Cafe. Join us. It's free coffee and sometimes a rather repetitious agenda, but there's also folks who get together, and there are usually some free sweet snacks, which can be... depends on your taste, of course. In any case, that happens from 11 to 1 every Thursday, and we contacted Wes, I think, at his home, probably in Marina or thereabouts, or Salinas. I'm not quite sure where he's centrally located. And we got this interesting report, which he goes into at some length. He's himself recently been arrested when he tried to video a sheriff's confrontation with the Pajaro River encampment folks, who were... That same day, an injunction was filed, but that didn't stop the sheriffs and didn't stop them from arresting him and now charging him and other people they arrested with, I think, a trespass and obstructing. In any case, you're going to hear more about that, more about the upcoming, the struggles of the Monica Tone and the Pajaro River Homeless Union, who have been relocated, I don't know, is it three or four times now? Or they've actually been sort of on the move, sort of a trail of tears or a trail of weariness anyway. Here he is talking about it. You get to hear the details.
Gruesome struggles in the Marina and Pajaro residence. I want to give a call to old Wes White and see if we can get an update on how things are going in Watsonville, since I understand they've all been... The encampment was cleared a week or two ago.
What are they going to do now?
The parking lot at the levee.
The parking lot at the levee in Watsonville, yeah. Ridge Street parking lot. So I don't know what the... I think some of them are put into five-day vouchers in motels. But that's not much. And considering they destroyed their lodging before, you know, they... removed all their structures, they removed all their property.
From the Bridge Street parking lot?
Well, from that and from the earlier Pajaro River.
Removed and, like, the police confiscated it all?
I think they confiscated, either destroyed it or claimed they're holding it.
Oh, really? They didn't...
Hey, Wes, we're recording you, so beware.
Okay.
We have a small HUF meeting here, and we're talking about Pajaro and Marina. Do you have any updates on what went on there?
Well, Pajaro first, I suppose. You know, I'd have to go to court today for arraignment. And, you know, we're getting that settled and squared away, I guess. Had one set of people in Marina yesterday, and two people for Pajaro this morning, and two more people for Pajaro this afternoon. And we'll probably be sending for a pretrial conference in the middle of February. Right now we have dates of the 16th and the 17th at 9 a.m.
What are the charges?
Trespass and obstruction.
Okay, and... who are the notorious defendants, if you want to say who they are, other than, of course, you, bad man?
I have a list of case numbers, except for Sasha. I don't have Sasha Sage is one, S-H-A-S-H-A-S-A-G-E. She's out of Marina, and that one is set for... pretrial conference like February 16th.
In Monterey County?
Yes, in Monterey County, Salinas Courthouse.
Okay.
Clara Donovan is set for February 17th at 9 a.m.
Where?
In Salinas. Yes.
Gotcha.
And then May has to come back. I think February 4 is what that is. They didn't qualify for the DA, the public defender at the time. Mm-hmm. So we still have two more, Iana Ramirez, and so the one that I just mentioned is Arista May Bauer.
And these are here in Watsonville?
Salinas.
All in Salinas. Okay. And so no one was busted at the bridge camp, in other words.
Correct.
And, all right, so those are the people who are due. That won't be happening until mid-February. What's their housing situation? Are these housed people or homeless people?
So far, except for Shasha, she does have a place, but it's intermittent, and who knows if it's going to happen, when, how long, but her RV and trailer are on that property, and, it's okay for now, but, by the end of the month, I would imagine she'll have to find somewhere else to go.
That property being?
Somewhere in the peninsula somewhere, I don't know.
Gotcha.
What about your hearing, Wes?
That's this afternoon at 1:30.
Oh. You are being charged with?
The same two charges. Trespass and obstruction.
You have a public defender or not?
That's why you go to the hearing at 1:30. I'll get arraigned.
Oh, boy. Okay. Has anybody been showing up at these hearings to support people? Has anybody been?
Yes, there were two row of benches of supporters this morning.
Excellent. Mostly from Salinas or from elsewhere?
Elsewhere.
Elsewhere, all right. And, where is this case being publicized, if it's being publicized at all, and through what media?
Pajaro.rising. On Instagram.
Okay. And anything on Monterey County Homeless Advocates?
I reshare their stuff.
Okay. I noticed that you had a long, hour-long, rather, I don't want to call it a tearjerker, but it was quite a grim story by Wildfire, she'd lost her van the day after they told her that she could sell her van because she had housing.
No, well, so she was in like Toro Park RV, volunteer live on volunteer as long as you do community service, work for the county for free, then they'll let you have a place to stay. She was at Mount Toro for a couple of years, and then the pandemic and everything, and they just ran out of stuff for her to do, so they told her to get out, and they told quite a few people to get out. She ended up in Laguna Seca. This is earlier in the year, like April, and then like a month later was when California reopened, and then she got kicked out with them. Everybody that came from Colonel Durham, and then ended up at the Marina parking lot.
That's where she is now.
So she was already cycling in and out of doing programs and everything, and as soon as she got there at the safe parking the parking lot, mid June, she started signing up for programs. So that's already 6 months or what? And they still ain't placed her, and they knew they were taking care of about a half a dozen people directly, specifically, and they still kicked everyone out.
This is out of the Marina parking lot.
Yeah, so then they told her, go in a hotel. She said, okay, I'll go in a hotel. What do I do with my RV? Well, we don't care about that. So then she started getting tickets on it. She went and reparked it. She injured herself, letting somebody else repark it now. That's why it's kind of going into sale. And, she just can't handle the RV anymore. And they did offer everyone a storage opportunity to store your RV. you know, while it was still the safe parking lot, but then everybody was like, well, then what do I do? Where's my home? You know, and so nobody really gave it up. And now she's requesting to have it stored, and of course, you know, nobody's doing anything. So, you know, how do we do the tickets? You know, they did say that they would, you know, relieve people's smog. Her registration has actually been paid for. It's just about passing the smog, and getting a park for an 88 Winnebago is kind of tough.
So, she doesn't own the Winnebago anymore, right?
She is selling it. It's in her name, but basically, she can't operate it anymore.
So I had heard from her, part of her story online, that she had thought she had hotel lodging, but now she's being bounced out of the hotel.
Yeah, the Whole Person Care Act, is what was funding her hotel stay. That's a state program that was apparently not refunded. So there's no funding available for it, which is why they called her and asked her if she could still move in an RV, and that's when she said, I just sold it.
So how much time has she got left in her hotel?
January 15th.
Okay.
This is what the county considers affordable housing. I don't know. And how are you supposed to step up beyond that? So we do have a housing advisory committee, which I am a commissioner of, a committee member. And I asked for an agenda item, kind of recounting Marina and Potro. He didn't really quite get the Potro one, but I need to send him more information about it too, I guess. Because really the tangible items that folks lost are going to be just possessions again, and a place to be and the fallout from that. So, and that is actually another issue that I want to make sure makes the agenda, because of the chasing around piece. I'm trying to make the county accountable if I can help it. So I'm going to need an awful lot of people to call in, especially from the Marina Coastal parking lot and the Potro River, to explain, because county just going to say, yeah, we did everything. And we need to go fill in those blanks and talk about our personal injuries.
So naturally, all the people that you have who came and filled the benches this morning, you were able to recruit at least half of them to do those phone calls, right?
Yeah, that would be nice to have a couple of phones on location, so then that way we can get the residents speaking specifically to their personal stories, because what was purported to have happened is the county did everything, they crossed all their I's and dotted all their they did everything, but we'll be like, except for
right. But what I'm saying is, obviously you can never do all these things yourself. But if you have all these people appearing in the courtroom, you naturally went down, got all their phone information and their contact information, and you will now be able to contact them later to perhaps get some volunteer assistance.
Absolutely. Yeah, we already have a group, so yes.
Oh, that's great. That's great. I was being sarcastic, but I'm glad to hear that that's actually happening. Very good. What about the situation? I understood that the bridge encampment, that is the refugees from the Pajaro River, who were, weathering the storms and being threatened with arrest and holding out and getting support from the community, got, 5 or 10 day vouchers? And that
means... And now they're back on the street. So they made another place right next to the 420 bridge, adjacent to it, closer to the river, I think. But it's county property, so they're there. And the sheriffs came out last night, said they'd be back, and today they just posted a notice about an hour ago.
What did the notice say?
72-hour notice.
And
I'll send you a picture of it.
How goes the... the possibility of resistance, whereas these clowns who are doing this kind of notice posting and then so-called enforcement action get paid, a hefty salary, the people that are volunteering to, shall we say, raise the issue with them and say, through us, if you want to fuck with these people, or at least we're here documenting, they don't get paid shit. So how goes your troops in that regard? You understand what I'm saying? In other words, are you likely to get a response? Last time this happened, people showed up in some numbers to oppose the 72-hour deportations. Is this likely to happen again in the next 72 hours?
I am unclear. In fact, now that we're dealing with a different jurisdiction, I'm not sure how it goes with the court either. I'm not sure. I think that strategy is being formulated by the group.
And what about an injunction such as been proposed, considered not just for this group or being...
Well, they're actually speaking a lot closer to the attorney than I am, so that would be a better question for a couple other people.
It'd be nice if I could ever get them, for sure. I'd be happy to ask them that question. And so if you get them and you feel like it, ask them for me.
Okay.
Monica has not been returning her calls. So...
Right.
And I know some of it is because of phone problems, some of it is because of conflict problems, some of it is because of all kinds of other problems, but I can't...
Well, it's just a shit ton of drama, and then I have to, explain it and re-explain it. Definitely can be a headache.
Right. Well, they don't have to do anything, but it'd be nice to pick up the phone, that sort of thing. Anyway, I will leave it at that. Is there anything happening in Salinas that we should know about that you haven't talked about that's changed in the last week?
Not terribly that I'm aware of. I mean, the city, I do know that they're planning on vacating a lot of people, and supposedly they're going to have more than enough rooms for the amount of people that they want to vacate. And, of course, I said, well, is it 1,300?
But now, as is my custom, we're going to have a David Rovics musical break and probably more of these as we proceed through the two-hour show. This first song is called Butcher for Hire, and rather than play the song and then give you the David Rovic notes, I'll do his description first. On August 16, 2016, John Timoney died. He distinguished himself in his life by loyally serving the interests of the capitalist class. As police chief of several major cities, Timoney vilified protesters, misinformed his officers about the nature of other large protests, and otherwise whipped up a hysterical atmosphere prior to the major protests that were always about to occur in the cities where he was brought in to lead a city's police department. Police under his command systematically committed human rights violations and broke the law with prior intent to do so. Departments he led always had a huge slush fund for the lawsuits brought by protesters whose rights they intended to violate. They fully intended to lose these lawsuits in advance, all part of Timoney's policing strategy to suppress the democratic impulses of civil society by any means necessary, regardless of legality or morality. The extreme police brutality Timoney directed at civil society groups in Philadelphia in 2000 and Miami in 2003 played a significant role in the ultimately successful suppression of the anti-capitalist movement of the day.
Want to have a protest in the USA? Want to speak your mind in the American way? If there are some rich white men with whom you disagree and thought you had the right of assembly, there's a man you should know, because he will follow you wherever you go. John Timoney, butcher for hire. He's a brutal thug and a dirty liar. He's a cop among cops, a man among men. And oh my God, he's back again. He'll protect our freedom in his own special way by smashing in your face too. on gold carts, hill band meetings, hill band signs, hill band circles, hill band lines. He'll stand up upon his throne and say, go back to your free speech zone, John Timoney, butcher for hire. He's a brutal thug and a dirty liar. He's a cop among cops, a man among men. And oh my God, he's back again. But someday he'll meet his end. He's already halfway round the bend. He'll take stock of what he's done, stare at the notches on his gun. He'll look into the mirror and at his poor wife and say, oh my God, I've been a scumbag my whole life. John Timoney, butcher for hire. He's a brutal thug and a dirty liar. He's a cop among cops, a man among men. And oh my God, he's back again. John Timoney, butcher for hire. He's a brutal thug and a dirty liar. He's a cop among cops, a man among men. And oh my God, he's back again.
Of course, the answer is no. But, you know, they still plan on moving people. So I'm not sure exactly what to do, how to do, especially with the man-spreading issue. Where am I legally, constitutionally allowed to be? Oh, my God, dude.
Can you clarify that?
Well, okay, so documentation and resistance and everything else, you know, as part of the arraignment, I need to steer clear of anything that comes remotely close to perpetuating the same or similar defense.
Well, I would never have done that myself when I was facing these kinds of bullshit charges. But I understand that some fancy legalistic attorney might think that. I don't agree with that, but that's, you know, each person would make their own choices there.
Well, the judge is asking you right there and then, do you promise that you won't commit a same or similar offense? And I'm like, I don't even know what I did wrong. So, you know, all I'm doing is documenting. And so, yeah, of course. I don't even know why I'm in trouble the first time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, I guess any questions that anybody here has for Wes? Kevin doesn't have any.
Is Anthony planning to try to get another TRO or anything?
I hope so. I don't know. I'm not as close to the case as they are. Right. You know, I mean, the momentum and the energy of those folks, you know, they've been awesome. It's tremendous. They've been keeping constant tabs with the attorney. So I'm not in the loop.
When's the last time you talked to Anthony?
I don't know. A week or two ago.
And at that time, was there any intention of getting an injunction?
Well, at that time, we were getting people into the hotels. So this is like, you know, two or three eras ago already.
So there was no intention at that time of getting an injunction, even though it was well known that this voucher would only last for 5 or 10 days, correct?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know any of it, you know.
You know, you were there. I assume you know what you know, so that's why I asked.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, the amount of energy that's able to be put into everything is, you know, certainly lacking.
I'm not criticizing the energy. Again, you tend to get defensive about this. I am saying, as far as you know, is there any plan for an injunction at this time? That you have heard about?
Santa Cruz County, no, I do not. I know just a couple days ago they decided where they were going to be.
Who decided where, who was going to be?
The group, the warming center.
Oh, the folks, the refugees from Pyro River.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And but they certainly anticipated they would not be left unmolested there, correct?
Of course. Well, you're analyzing in a situation I can't be in everybody's head, but yeah, no, they've been in discussion with the attorney, and so what they've formulated and come up with together collectively is where they're at.
Right, and you haven't talked to them about it.
Not specifically.
But they certainly anticipated they would not be left unmolested there, correct?
Of course. Well, you're analyzing a situation I can't be in everybody's head, but yeah, no, they've been in discussion with the attorney, and so what they've formulated and come up with together collectively is where they're at.
Right, and you haven't talked to them about it.
Not specifically. I mean, I'm paying attention in the group chat. But, you know, I'm not making decisions for them, and I'm not in the room when things are being talked about.
And so, as far as the group chat goes, what's the general statement about what's happening?
Well, they need a lot of support. They need food. They need blankets. They need people to do cop watch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the basic whining stuff that you know, is needed everywhere.
My question, though, is did they announce any intention to secure an injunction?
No.
Okay. That was the only question I had. I appreciate that. Any questions, Fox?
No.
Okay. Questions you got for us, Wes, or any...
Has anyone heard of Louis Rodriguez before? He's running for governor.
I have not.
So I got a sales pitch for you. Louis Rodriguez is my direct affiliation would be the Poor People's Campaign. But, you know, he's a former gangster, you know, matured and everything. He's actually a really good guy. And Crystal Sanchez is running for lieutenant governor, so running mate.
Uh-huh.
And you may or may not know Crystal Sanchez, but she's the president of the Sacramento Homeless Unit.
I know.
So that's our friend. That's our buddy. That's our in.
Well,
you know, so this is a party that is all about people. This is, you know.
What party is that?
Poor People's Campaign, I suppose, would be my words on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
National call for moral revival.
All I know is that Crystal Sanchez is another person who has never returned a call. So
okay. That's
all I can tell you about her. I'm glad you have better relations with her, and I know that you did some solidarity work with her a couple years ago in Sacramento. It sounded good to me. But,
yeah, we're actually regional co-coordinators of the Western States for the National Union of the Homeless.
I won't hold that against you, actually.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Sure. No, I don't want to hold you responsible for the crimes of others, right? That wouldn't be fair. So, anything you want to add with your pitch for the politician of the week, Rodriguez, that's his name?
There you go. Louis4Rodriguez.org.
Uh-huh.
I mean, Louis4Governor.org.
Is it L-U-I-S?
L-U-I-S,
okay.
The number 4,
okay.
Governor.org. And we're gathering petitions right now, signatures, to get them on the ballot, and it's the in-lieu petition, so every signature we get counts for like a dollar.
Mm-hmm. And how many signatures do you need?
Like 4,700.
Mm-hmm. I gotcha.
Okay. Yeah, so we're looking between 5,000 and 8,000 to submit. It's real easy, and it's also another reason, hopefully, you know, in my mind, to help people register to vote and claim their residency, because, you know, in a lot of places, unless you have an address in their system, then, you know, you're transient, you don't belong here. And to establish residency, you got to have something connected with them.
Gotcha. Okay, well, I will leave this discussion of the politician of the week for another call, unless you want to say...
Well, the politician of the week is also your mentality, the whole flow of life. I mean, you know, I mean, every platform you want to fucking bullshit about, you know, it is right in line with it. Anything social, civic, environmental justice oriented,
well,
boom,
yeah,
there,
you
know,
and I, you and have,
oriented.
Yeah, you and I have different opinions of the value of putting a lot of energy into political offices. But,
that's,
you know,
true. Well, but a state of mind is really what we're trying to create, because if we don't have a voting bloc and we don't have sway and influence, then what the fuck are we talking about? We're going to talk about shit that other people want to talk about.
Useless.
Not what we need.
Well, there are different positions on this, but let's not argue here. You obviously have taken a position for years and run for offices, and that's what you do. And I'm not saying you haven't done some good in doing that, not so much because of the political power, but because, you know, the connections you make in terms of, you know, simply the human beings you come into contact with and the message that you put forward. But I'm going to give you the last word there, Wes, whatever.
Last word, Wes.
Well, I don't know. Luis Rodriguez, pretty good path. Definitely not the corporatist route. Mm-hmm. So, you know, people first is the angle we need to be going at.
And all I can tell you is beware nonprofits with pretty names, like Poor People's Campaign. Yeah.
Sure. No, I get it. I know. Stop the Short on Purpose is one of the problems and the main issues of everything.
Politicians sloganeering.
Yeah, but in any case, you know.
Oh, yeah, these have impact, not just sales pitch.
Uh-huh. Well, I will leave it at that.
Right, well, you know, that Brandon Council, we did try to go for it, and we kind of succeeded more in Salinas because they got a majority. And, you know, that I might have lost. I might have came in last place, but my issue came in first in a lot of ways in Salinas.
Well, that's the issue. I'm not. We'll talk about that in our next conversation. I mean, I am interested,
but we're still losing.
I gotta go because this is a Huff meeting, so there.
We're going Huff on.
All right, man. We'll talk again.
Bye-bye. Huff on.
All right, man.
Thank you.
That was cool.
So, Fox, have an agenda, for heaven's sake.
Oh God.
All right. We just had the updates on the gruesome struggles of the Marina and Pajaro refugees. Anybody been in the benchlands recently? I don't think I have either. So all I can tell you was when I was there, I think it was over a week ago.
I think Kevin was there last.
Yeah, I was there a week ago today. I gave you that report, and I said it earlier. I can say it again.
No, I don't know. You can if you want, but I think.
Yeah, there's no. I don't know anything about here on the agenda is benchland status. No hookups, no charging stations. I don't know about that. But there, I saw no standing water. And I was there the day after the rain quit.
I'm not trying to think when I was there, which was.
It was before that.
People might have been a little bit before that.
People were drying out and seemed to have it together.
That's good.
And
didn't you see the electrical stations set up again? They had charging stations before.
Yeah, what would a charging station look like?
It's like a board and it has a bunch of electrical outlets.
Yeah, for charging phones and devices.
Well, I understand what it would be for, but like, yeah, okay. No, I didn't.
It would
like
be
that.
Right near one of the stairways that goes up into the path.
Well, I'll remember next time I'm down there to have
they
a look at that.
I guess they took it down because of the rains.
Possibly.
That's ridiculous.
But they would have.
I mean, if it's out in the weather, you know, it'll foul the electronics and everything it can, potentially.
So I drove by Depot Park. That's this next thing. Depot Park, Camp Paradise reports, and scattered outreach from around town. Any reports, Fox, from your neck of the woods?
No, I've mostly been around the Sahara stuff lately, so. And that has already been covered. So no.
Yeah, when was the last time you were in the Pajaro area?
It's been like a week, but I'm in various little chats about it. But I'm pretty sure Wes is in all the same chats. So.
Any word about an injunction coming up to protect the latest attack on the new bridge camp?
As far as I'm aware, Anthony says that he doesn't think it's worth even trying to do anything like that unless people are in a park.
People are in a park,
like a specifically a park type of public land, even though any public land should be valid. He doesn't think it's worth it unless they're in a literal park because he doesn't think it'll be successful.
Did you talk to him directly, or did you get this from Monica?
Yeah, from Monica and other people who are talking to him.
I got you. How long ago was this?
In the last few days.
Okay. Are you planning to go back to Watsonville?
Well, I'm generally there every few weeks for Harm Reduction Coalition related things.
Mm-hmm.
Not directly to this camp and such, but that's usually around the time that I encounter those things.
Any harm reduction reports from Santa Cruz area?
Not that I can think of at the moment.
Hmm.
Oh, and Fox, what happened to all of the things that were in that encampment? Do you know if the cops confiscated them or the tents and the stuff? Yeah.
Yeah, some things were allowed to be cleared out by the residents. Some things were just thrown in a dumpster by Watsonville Public Works. There was like a handful of activist people who helped people pack up their stuff before that, but anything that was left over was just thrown in a dumpster by Public Works.
This next song by David Rovix is called Today in Charlottesville, and he writes, on August 12, 2017, Heather Heyer was killed and 19 others were injured when a member of the far right plowed his car into a crowd of people marching against white supremacists, once again proving that while words themselves can't kill you, they can make others kill, whether they use sticks, stones, guns, or cars to do the killing.
There was a massacre in church that got certain forces moving. Many towns are now at least superficially improving, such as in Virginia, where a statue of General Lee stands as a reminder of the days of slavery. In the city center, an indelible mark in the spot that's been renamed Emancipation Park, slated for removal when a judge intervened, which might be the moment that most fully set the scene for 19 injured, one killed today in Charlottesville. With their men in the White House, members of the right marched through the university, torches alight, chanting against immigrants, Africans and Jews, but it's not the flying bottles that put them in the news so much as the bigot in the car, revving his engine loud, speeding forward and then back, running down the crowd, using the same tactic promoted by Islamic State. Maybe he was even shouting, God is great. 19 injured, one killed today in Charlottesville. Used to be in chains, now their descendants, who still remain, are being forced to leave by gentrification, just like poor white folks all across the nation. And with the presidential tweets and xenophobic rants, it's just a matter of time when some pawn takes the chance to plow into a march with half a ton of steel. This is not fake news, it's real. 19 injured, one killed today in Charlottesville.
And now back to Santa Cruz and Lot 27, where Food Not Bombs continues to serve food from noon to 4, sometimes later, every day, all day, or at least during that period of time. And, of course, I ran into a few folks, as I usually do, and we talked.
It's
It's January 5th.
It's going to turn into a
Met the Food Not Bombs lot. And a man is talking to his guitar. What is your name, man?
I'm not known. How do you do? I got a 6 foot tall invisible rabbit.
This is his own sounding chamber.
There we go.
Dreamcatcher, what is happening? Are you composing? Is that what's going on here?
I'm Dreamcatcher, and I'm kind of in a good mood.
Good.
I have my teeth in. I wish y'all could see them.
Yeah, I can see them.
They look pretty good.
They do, actually, but I don't really notice you without your teeth.
That one way above the other one.
You're pointing to what you would call a contrail.
Yeah, contrails, yeah. Conning everybody into thinking that it's something other than just changing air temperatures quickly.
Meanwhile, back on Earth, what have you noticed?
I have noticed that I get treated very badly when I go to the shelter to try to collect my mail.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, I went to today. Let's go talk over there where it's less noisy over by my place so I can snort some heroin and snort some coke and cuss a little bit.
Okay. The music has become softer and you're able to speak about things a little more easily.
Right. I hope they get, recorded properly and without misunderstanding. Yes, I've been here. It rained hard, but I stayed dry, and I hung with it, and I helped others, but this camp is kind of dissolving because, someone's trying to take over the parking lot, like Lot 27 in College Zone and all that crap. Well, people come here for help, especially the women. They feel a little safer here than most places, and I provide that, I think. I openly suggest that if there is any problems, I can come to me. If I can't handle it, I know someone who can. Oh, definitely. I'm a resource social alchemist, I found out. Not just a resource alchemist. That's my comic book version of me.
Still sampling the Food Not Bombs cuisine?
No, I don't eat at Food Not Bombs. I cook my own meals because they don't have meat. I'm a meat eater.
Do you have any reports on whether the quality of the food, vegetarian? I think sometimes they have meat.
It's your bike, Andy. Where's your backpack? Okay, Joseph's got an eye on it. Thank you. See what I do?
Helping other people with their stuff.
I keep an eye on their stuff because there's a lot of thievery around here.
Have things changed recently?
People, we're starting to clean up because I'm taking over. Koopa's not here anymore, so there's no angels that she so calls, which are totally fucking idiots. They're not angels. She just gives them a chance, and they get fluffed up a little bit, but it doesn't last long because she really doesn't provide anything other than guidance to what they need. She hasn't really provided. Just like I do. I guide you to what you need, but if you need some company, I'll be a magician and come with you. You won't have to go alone.
And you have a guitar.
Yes, and I know where everything is, and I know who to talk to, and if someone just would shut the fuck up for a minute and listen to me, they might get what they want before they even ask for it.
That's, how's the artwork treating you?
I lost about half my portfolio. It got waterlogged.
How did it happen?
I put everything in bags and did the best I could. Yes, thank you. It rains so hard, and I got a migraine, so that night, oh my God, I could not do anything. I just put a couple of chiclets in my mouth. I used to use those for teeth filling for photos. Chiclets.
I'm a chiclet fan myself.
Yeah, but the guy with the big buck teeth, we called him Chiclet Space when we were little kids. But anyway, we're getting along, but there's a fight every day.
I notice there are still a few tents up on the upper levee here, the path.
I saw the officers personally take a picture of one of the camps up there, which was a mess left by somebody else. And they thought it was his, but it wasn't. But he cleaned it up anyway, thank God. But he still hasn't returned with my hot water bottle yet from last night. I was trying to give him a job, let him earn some of his dope.
How was the impact of the most recent rains?
It was very devastating. It flooded, almost came up into the bench, but it stopped. point in time where they allowed it to stop rising, because they can open and close those gates and raise and lower that river height any way they want to. They tried to, you know, well, whatever, it rose to just everybody was starting to move, you know, they weren't going to take a chance, but some people just couldn't move. They collect too much stuff, and that's the problem. If you can't keep it all in your tent and sleep in your tent at the same time, then you got, there's a problem. We all know
that.
Have
you spent much time in the benchlands yourself?
No, I won't at all. No, I don't. It's not safe there. It's not safe as far as environment. It's not safe as far as social. It's not safe as far as having anything valuable and letting anybody know that you got it. Because when you're gone, they'll be there. They'll cut through the back of it.
And you feel it's safer here?
Oh, yeah, because I know what's going on here. I've got a really good... I know what time it is here. Yes, I do. I know what time it is there. I just mind my own business. But when I'm needed, I respond.
Any reports from the Dakota Landing, the northern, I should say the southern area? The area that was fenced in, the Brent Adams area?
Down below the footbridge up there? Or
the footbridge and the Soquel Bridge.
Yes. Yes, I would. Thank you. I'm being interrupted by two angels, so...
So sorry.
I'm myself with Robert, everybody, and I'm glad I can be, because it's important that I am consistent. Now, I don't get high anymore. It doesn't matter what I do. It's just not... It just doesn't do anything.
You're holding a roach in your hand.
Right. I like smoking. I think it's more the act of smoking than anything. But I do get high off the dabs. Those are very powerful. But I have a pretty good time lately, Robert, that of not taking life too seriously, because there's too many people taking life too seriously around me, and I laugh at them, and that makes them even madder, darn it. They want to play my guitar, and I go, no, you're too angry. I love you, Robert. Robert's teaching me how to be a presentable radio voice, which I think I'm practicing a little bit. I'm conscious of that, and we're going to do another little broadcast of mine, because I think the first one I did with Steve, I look like 100 years old in there, I thought. Well, I look a lot better now with my teeth and my young skin, because I'm going the other way. You know, that vaccination did something. Yeah.
Positive or negative?
Positive. Anything that's going to happen is going to be positive. Anything. It's all changing now. Nothing happened. I saw this commercial where the internet has a bunch of crap on there. But there's some messages that are kind of cool, you know. Nothing happened. That's that black guy that makes the statements against whatever.
You do not know it, but I hear you.
But I've been, my friend's been letting me do this one, and he's pretty funny and pretty right on. You know, nothing happened, damn it. You know, like the war went on, nothing happened.
Now, are you here at night during the...
Yes, I am.
How are the police treating people at night?
They're only coming through and making sure vehicles aren't abandoned or being slept in. So if you hide very well in your vehicle, it's okay to park here all night. They aren't going to tell you unless you got a warrant when they run your plate. They come in, they sit right there at the driveway, they take a picture of all the plates in here, and they know if you're wanted or not before they leave the parking lot. But they're pretty cool with us. We're cleaning up pretty well. I said, if we want to be a gang lot 27, well, let's be the neatest gang looking lot 27, because we're an eyesore right now. So I started getting everybody, if you got a NERP in our parking lot, in my parking lot, I say, you better have a bucket and a gripper in your hand picking up trash, and I don't want to hear you play your radio either. That's their verbology. All night this went cat off the wall. Like, everybody could hear him. He's bugging everybody. And I had to shut him up. I asked him nicely, and he still wouldn't. So whatever happened, happened.
I won't inquire any further.
He doesn't have to sleep here and run his radio all night, his mouth and talking to himself very loudly and yelling like she does over there. She doesn't do it here at night, though, thank God. But the people that come here to do that are... It's not appropriate, man. We need a break. We don't need to hear that.
Any reports of vehicles being taken elsewhere in the city?
Yes, I've had a few friends who get their vehicles towed. That's because they left them too long in the wrong place when they let somebody else drive them and burn up their motor. Yeah, recent case with a person that was
more
here.
More than one vehicle or just one?
No, there's been a couple of vehicles that a truck and an RV and a, you know, a lot of my friends just, they had lots of chances, like a whole year for the cops to let them know that they got to get their tax, please get your tax. Well, I got to make my pay, I got a receipt and everything, but still no change in the tax. And I know these people were told for a year before they got towed.
Any improvements on how the Housing Now people are treating folks who are...
Oh, boy, you're going to talk to one that's very upset about this housing thing. I don't see them housing anybody, not anybody except a methadone or a heroin addict. And I'm pissed off, and they tried to treat me like a heroin addict, and I couldn't take it. The thing they told me the most was, put your mask on. That's mostly what they said to me at the shelter that I just got kicked out of for a sexual threat of some kind to some chick that I don't even know. I didn't even, you know, and they meet me. I get a letter at the gate when I'm coming home one night that I can't come in.
Which shelter is this?
Fucking one on Coral Street. No, I've been...
Paul Lee Loft?
Yes, that's where I was at. And I was out of the rain, and I was getting comfortable. I was still reducing because I had still too much stuff, but I was getting it fine-tuned to what my art stuff is. And that never successfully went through the debugging thing, and I was there like a month. I lost all my stuff coming down from the golf land. I called within 2 weeks. I thought I called on the last day. No answer. Nobody knows where all our totes are that were supposed to be retrieved within 2 weeks. And I was trying to do that. All I had to do was just bring it down to the shelter on a van. So I lost my life basically in two totes because that was the stuff I didn't want to move in to the shelter yet until I figured out what I wanted. And I knew it was...
Move it from...
The golf lands up there next to the armory.
Golf Lands is now vacant? Or?
Yeah, it doesn't exist anymore. That was like a year-long experiment of some kind because people died up there, people OD'd up there. And
how was it as a residence general?
It was, these people didn't know anything. It was their first run. They just hired anybody, and they put the things together. And, you know, they tried real hard. They had some good people up there. I got along with mostly all the staff, basically, until they started telling me that to turn the lights off at 10 because it might be bothering somebody. Might be bothering somebody? There wasn't one complaint about the light being on. There's this big floodlights light on a stand that they gave us to use for lighting at night. And I work all night because I'm not disturbed all night. So... turning the lights off at 10 when I need the light to work on. I'm not bothering anybody. Everybody's got a tent plus tarps all over them. They got a double wall tent. You can't see them like they're fire and they're doing no thing. That's why they do that. Plus it helps keep the rain out because these tents leak like a sieve. I had an inch puddle of water in my tent. Had it all set up right, but these tents leak. It's sealed up a little bit, but you don't stay dry in a tent unless you see.
How many people were there with you in the golf lands, you know?
There's room for 40, but actually only 20 kind of moved in, but only 10 of us actually lived there. I slept there every night.
And what do you think happened to those folks after golf lands closed?
Well, I made sure I had a place to go to from there, which I couldn't believe they were just going to just kick us out, and that's what they did. They kicked us out into the street, and some people went down to golf land, to the bench land, which was an unsanctioned camp place now. You know, no fence around, no jeremiah, no security, no nothing. It's bullshit. They threw us back on the street, basically. But I did my best to work into the shelter, to the loft, which I did because I've been through the bench land and then went up to the golf land. I'm hanging with these people. They're the ones that are going to get me where I need to go if I handle myself right. And I did. Because, you know, I've been homeless longer than they've been alive. I call myself a camper, not a homeless man.
What do you hear from about Cooper, where she's at?
Well, she got, you know, intimidated or run out by her boyfriend, who, you know, she doesn't want a boyfriend, you know. But she had a significant other for a while. But, you know, things aren't going right because he's not getting what he wants and she's not going to give up anything other than, you know, goof off like she does here, you know. But, you know, she does a lot of good, though, by helping and directing people. But it's she doesn't look for the things that we see, like a thief and a liar and a junkie, you know. She just sees the person that needs something. And she can, basically, she has a sleeping bag hidden out there somewhere, because I got one when I needed it from her. Thank you. And I provide those things to others. I've sold 3 jackets to people that were freezing, and 2 girls that came at me when the sun was going down because it gets cold quick, you know, for blankets. And I'm just like, you know, I don't invite them in. I give them my own blanket off my bed if I have to. Yeah, because all blankets were wet. Everybody's blankets were wet, and their sleeping bags were wet. And I really want to thank the community for their donations here at Lot 27, because they got off to the right places, because I even needed some. I found a feather bed. I slept so good last night for the first time. I slept into, 12 o'clock or something.
We have been talking with that, finally, good sleeper.
Dream nightmare maker. But no, this is dream catcher, and I am thankful and grateful, and I'm cleaning up this place. I hope it doesn't get shut down, because what I'd have to do if that happened, if they made everybody leave, would be to put everything in my trailer and hook it back up to my bike. My bike got returned finally, but it came back messed up, so I'm working on that. But I still have a trailer to fill with everything I can pull, which is okay, and I can roll on out of here and not be obligated or taxed in any way. You know, they'll appreciate me when I pack up in about 3 minutes and roll out of here with just 2 tubs and my, you know, that's it.
Thank you, Dreamcatcher.
You got it.
Rubik's next song is called Today in Yemen, and he writes, a U.S.-made bomb dropped by Saudi forces on a bus parked in the middle of a crowded market in Yemen killed scores of people, including 44 children.
There's a heat wave in Portland. The sun shines down. Sprinklers are running all over town. It's hot too in Yemen, but lucky for us, nobody here was on that bus. Where 44 children died today. Hear the buses pass by, and they pass by again. Inside the bus left, came back, and then 44 children died today. School trip, a picnic, as the bombings go on. I guess they should have stayed home. Now they're all gone. 44 children dying. Bodies and fragments of bombs litter the market square. Most of the fragments, if you wash off the blood, you'll see USA written there. Where 44 children died. Thank you.
few days ago I was in Berkeley picking up the monthly homeless newspaper, Street Spirit, which I leave copies of at the Food Not Bombs meal, as well as at the Sub Rosa Cafe, as well as at the library, and I keep some with me for people who want to. And there aren't very many of them, but there are some homeless folks who sell the paper in order to, get coffee money or whatever. And also because they like the paper. If you're interested in selling Street Spirit or Street Sheet, they're two different papers, but they both cover homeless topics, and largely they're not so much edited by homeless folks as they have a large homeless contingent involved, and they are sold by homeless people. One by the Coalition on Homelessness in San Francisco, the other by it's a Berkeley Art Project, I believe now. It used to be the American Friends Service Committee that did Street Spirit, but that changed. Not necessarily for the better, but and perhaps not terribly for the worse. Anyway, I happened upon something that really struck me, because I'm a fan of the game. A bunch of tables set up with chess sets on them along the Telegraph Avenue sidewalk near the corner of Dwight Way and Telegraph in Berkeley about 4 or 5 o'clock at night. And I interviewed the guy who originated this and apparently took responsibility for it every day. Here's the interview. This, it's about 5:30 on January 4th or January 4th or so. And it's Tuesday evening in Berkeley. I'm at the chess corner here on Telegraph Avenue, at Telegraph and Dwight. And this is something that happens, I think, every day from dawn to deep dark. And I'm talking with a man who spends a lot of time doing this, but who also keeps an eye on the commercialization of Telegraph Avenue. Would that be fair to say?
Sure would. Definitely, yeah.
So you've mentioned, and I haven't even noticed it, you pointed it out to me, that there are these kind of, electronic digital kiosks that are sitting up now on each corner, and that they wanted to put one here, but it was, should we say, objected to by some of the people?
They were put in, it was voted on the city council before the pandemic and never really finished up on their agenda. And then post-pandemic, they kind of just rammed this project through. The city planners put these kiosks all on Shattuck Avenue and up and down Telegraph Avenue. It's Ike Smart Kiosks.
What do these kiosks say? What kind of messages do they, what educational messages do they provide for us?
It appears the upside is certainly the wayfinding. You know, there's maps, schedules of buses, and the catches for the digital signing, advertising. The company keeps the revenue from that and trades us maps and schedules. The kiosks have safety features. It's got a 911 push button. The question is, what else does it have? Are they equipped with cameras? What is the technology? It was pretty large packet of fine print in the user agreement. What was interesting was there is a small line that discusses that Ike Smart Kiosk is not responsible for any of the data that they use from your phone. And nowadays we might have sensitive medical data, digital vaccine passports, that sort of thing, can fall into the wrong hands. So the city has done a public-private partnership with a company who really has put their infrastructure in without any oversight, no environmental impact study, no health impact study, no traffic impact study.
No full disclosure.
No full disclosure. One of the mayoral candidates for Berkeley, Aiden Hill, had researched it and discovered that there were supposed to be no cameras in these kiosks, and they added cameras in the agreement. They changed the wording and called them selfie feature. So there were no cameras, but there is a selfie feature, and the user can take their own picture, and it utilizes the camera.
Now, are these cameras actually a part of any kiosks that you're aware of?
I am unaware of the actual infrastructure of them. It's hard to find out or get an answer from the mayor or a response.
Mayor Jesse Arguin.
Yes, and we're in Councilman Rigel Robinson's District 7, which also encompasses People's Park.
Formerly Chris Worthington.
So they're the ones. Sophia Hanna had expressed concern that they were never given the option of a static kiosk. They were just said, this is what we're doing. They ripped up the concrete, installed these digital kiosks. They began to work with us, the electric company, doing it. Then one morning they decided to come by themselves and kind of clear the chess club out of the way and began work that wasn't scheduled. And it got a little contentious with some of the people in the neighborhood.
For those who don't know, the chess club, chess tables are at the corner of, as we mentioned before, Dwight and Telegraph. But that's kind of, it was opposite what was Shakespeare's bookstore and what it's Kitty Corner from what is now Pete's Coffee and Tea. And it takes up about, an eighth of the block, something like that.
Yeah, I'd say about that. We have about eight tables at max, maybe.
You do not charge people to play chess?
No, it's just a donation.
All donation. And I'm going to sug you a little bit into this, and you don't have to talk about this stuff if you don't want to, because you said you were a little reluctant, perhaps.
You can edit well. You can ask any question you want.
I generally play everything that we get, so which makes for some interesting and sometimes very boring stuff.
Well, if you started asking me questions where I might curse, I'm saying,
you know. You might fucking curse? I don't appreciate that, man.
All right.
All right, then. So this is free radio, you've got to say. Fucking free radio, that sort of thing. So,
I hung out in the neighborhood for a long time, a decade or so. I used to hang out at the Med. We played chess in front of the Med. When Moe's would close, we'd move the tables across the street because the pot smoke wouldn't flow.
Here, the Med is gone.
Yeah, the Med is gone. But, you know, we were conscious of the cigarette and pot smoke by the front door, so sometimes we'd move the tables across the street, kind of where they are now. And, you know, back and forth, we played in the park a lot. The park is now, let's say, an encampment.
Sanctioned encampment?
I don't know if it's officially sanctioned, but UC has a social worker that is helping people, and they basically are using the park as the waiting room for some of the...
Pathway to housing?
Social work services, yeah, right. So it is a tent encampment at the moment. So we can't really play chess there anymore. So we kind of are displaced by what's happening in People's Park, the removal of public space there.
Do the Mad and campers disrupt chess games, or is it simply a less congenial environment? Or?
Morning chess players are loud, believe it or not. You know, there's kind of, you know, some boisterous coffee.
Disrupts the encampment.
Any conversations political that might go down, and it is people sleeping in those tents. It is their home. It's their backyards at the moment. That's an entirely separate argument that they are displaced, the people. Any activities that would take place in the park, chess, basketball, softball, dog walking, children, any of those activities.
Dope dealing.
And, well, that's what you wouldn't have your other park activities with what's happening there at the moment, you know. We're not real comfortable sitting. I'm not real comfortable sitting, and
so
I
set this up here at this corner of Dwight and Telegraph.
Yeah. There's a bunch of us, a bunch of volunteers that have been around People's Park for a while and on Telegraph Avenue.
How spontaneous and sort of impulsive is it? In other words, is it based upon the daily feelings of whoever shows up, or is there a sort of a more regular commitment that seems to happen based on some more organized situation?
It's seasonal based on who shows up. Some guys come and go. do other things, you know, and come through for a couple weeks or help out, then all right, I have to go back to my normal routine, or the boss is catching on, I'm working from the chess games, things like that, you know. It seems like that's the schedule that it takes, you know.
How long have you been doing this? In this location?
Well, we used to play when it was the Med. Chess has been around Berkeley a good decade.
And you know, this table setup has been here.
We would use that. We started using this because of the abandoned building. We're now 3-4 years of one of the main corners of Telegraph being redlined. Clearly, when you discuss redlining a neighborhood, if you
tell us a little bit about that.
Redlining is when corporate interests and commercial interests come in and depreciate real estate value in order to acquire it, to develop it. And if you can't see block by block, the University of California has been able to.
Our university? The University of California? University. UCB?
UCB has redlined the entire.
How can you say that?
Of Telegraph for development, amateurization of student housing.
I see you're here at this is what was Hans Bistro. It ain't no longer, I guess.
And they're crying for housing. It's an outcry for housing around here. So let's hope they figure it out. It looks like they're trying to figure out additional housing in the area. It's hard to please both sides, I know, but it looks like they have depreciated the entire neighborhood.
Provide really low-income housing for homeless folks. Oh, wait. No, probably not.
No. There's some profit in it, I'm sure.
I see there's a police officer,
you know,
across the street here. Is there much contact with the officials?
It's been positive. It's been positive.
Yeah, I know. I haven't lived in Berkeley continuously for a long time. I mean, I was here decades ago, and contact was not always so positive, and I was involved in the People's Park protests of the volleyball court stuff.
Right.
And that was a successful resistance attempt to, this is not said for you, but for anybody listening, to stop the gentrification of the courts. There's a new, of course, gentrification effort going on involving construction of a, 14-story building? How many stories is it supposed to have?
It got cut down. The project got cut in half, almost. I think it's, they say they want to put, God, don't get me, don't hold me to that, but I think it's down to 10, 9 or 10, something like that.
These tree huggers who want to stop the decent development of our park?
I believe some of the neighbors objected to the size of the building. I don't know who won the argument or why the plans changed. You can see that they're, it's not much of a park at the moment. It appears allowing to take place what's taking place in the park really removes the opportunity for it to be a park for any of the student body or any of the community who seems would have traditionally wanted to save the park. And so
is your opinion widely held? Widely held.
I'm not sure. I can't speak for other people's
opinions. I understand.
Yeah, it appears that they are redlining People's Park.
What's the reaction of merchants to your chess corner, if anything?
It's been mixed. It's been mixed, but it has caught the attention of quite a few serious chess players who love it and come through and coach sporadically. It's a free space rather than outlined, and so the volunteer effort seems to coordinate well with some of those chess players who their times volunteer as well. If they sit and play, they're good, you know. And so it's nice to have some good players.
You get a mix of people, young people, old people, rich people, poor people, or you mainly attract the riffraff.
It's a mix of everybody. It's a nexus. I think Telegraph is exchange of information in either Greek or Latin. I'm not mistaken.
Could be. I don't know.
That's what it means. I'm not sure which language, but telegraph. And so people sit and exchange information.
There's no telegraph anymore, as far as I know.
Bums and hobos playing chess with scientists. It's amazing, you know. You see it, and that's the cool stuff, the diamonds and the rough. We had an 8-year-old kid beat just about everybody on the sidewalk the other day.
Name of this prodigy?
Since he's a kid, I'll let him stay a kid.
Fair enough.
His dad wants to do that. And that was cool. We had about 30 people watching him. We have people who have met from other countries because they heard somebody speaking their language and said, started discussing where they were from together in another country. And they play chess now and hang out. And so we've seen a lot of those people meet like that. It's been kind of cool to see people drop by that we have coffee with in the morning. We're right across the street from two coffee shops without a bench. There isn't a bench for 8 blocks on Telegraph Avenue.
You want the riffraff to settle in, if you know what I mean.
Well, so apparently too many people were using the seats, so they removed them on Telegraph, part of that whole gentrification thing. They still never really made any adjustments as far as the seating on Telegraph. If you're a senior citizen or disabled and you get off of the 6 bus on Dwight, you will not find a bench for 7 blocks in a shopping district. If you have to wait for your wife to mail a package in the copy store and you'd like to sit outside, well, you know, you'll have to stand. There's no seating at any bus stop. There's a gentleman who's been taking this bus for 20 years and they just took the seat from that bus stop.
No, that's right across in front of Pete's Coffee.
Yeah, Pete's Coffee has no seats at any of the bus stops. There's people...
They might lie down and you know, go to sleep or something. Now, come on, man.
Yeah.
What would the tourists think?
We could sit and gripe all day about the stuff going on in the neighborhood, and that's I figured, well, there was, if we could just bring people together on one of these corners, it would be better to light a candle than
curse the darkness.
The darkness.
Dig it.
So kind of that's what we did, and continue to do what we've been doing.
Shivering in the dark. I mean, and there is a candle here, though.
Candles, yeah. So now, you know, we have these kiosks coming in, and we're not really sure. You know, what is that UV light from a screen? Look, there's one a block away from us, and you can see it. We're going to sit here bathed in that light. These are very few trees down here on Telegraph, and birds do live in these trees.
Or they did, anyway.
They did, and now these screens stay on 24/7. Who would need them in the middle of the night? I don't know.
You can tell when you want to look at a good ad. Come on.
Someone, a city that's supposed to be inclusive. The conversation never happened. These are obviously security-featured devices, but to put them in like a Trojan horse and have a private public partnership, who is the city turning our data over to?
And the next song that I've got from David Rovics is Ballad of John McCain. Senator and former Republican presidential candidate John McCain died of brain cancer on August 25th, 2018. Celebrated as a war hero, upstanding citizen, and maverick politician by the establishment media and many liberals, he was reviled as a war criminal by those around the world who were victims of the imperial wars he enthusiastically supported throughout his long career as a military hawk and a so-called cold warrior.
John McCain, John McCain. Your grandfather was an admiral and your father was one too. When you turned 17, you knew what to do. You signed up for the Navy so you could make it rain. Kill innocent civilians dropping bombs from planes. John McCain, John McCain, John McCain, John McCain, John McCain. On
your military service. You then made a run. You got into the Congress in 1981. In the halls of the Senate, you had only just arrived when you were caught up in corruption, one of the Keating Five. What should have been a loss, you turned into a gain. Not quite sure how you did it, the innocence you feigned. John McCain, John McCain, John McCain, John McCain, John McCain. You were the hero in the Senate who had survived the war, the one who would explain to them what they were fighting for. For each act of aggression, you would cheer along. You'd go visit the troops and sing your military songs. You'd thank them for their service, and then you'd watch them die as they fought for corporations launching missiles from the sky to the streets below, which would be covered with the stains, the blood of the innocent running down the drains. John McCain, more military spending and less of everything that matters to the people who want a peaceful place to be without some war-crazed senator calling them his enemy. You call yourself a maverick, whatever the heck that meant. You had lofty aspirations to be the U.S. president. Now you're dead. It's over. Your terroristic reign. Too bad about the cancer in your brain. John McCain. John McCain. John McCain.
What would the tourists think?
We could sit and gripe all day about the stuff going on in the neighborhood, and that's, I figured, well, there was, if we could just bring people together on one of these corners, it would be, you know, better to light a candle than
curse the darkness.
The darkness.
Dig it.
So kind of, that's what we did, and continue to do what we've been doing.
We are shivering in the dark, and there is a candle here, though.
The candles, yeah. So now, you know, we have these kiosks coming in, and we're not really sure. You know, what is that UV light from a screen? Look, there's one a block away from us, and you can see it. We're going to sit here bathed in that light. These are very few trees down here on Telegraph, and birds do live in these trees.
Or they did, anyway.
They did, and now these screens stay on 24/7. Who would need them in the middle of the night? I don't know.
You can tell when you want to look at a good ad. Come on.
Someone, a city that's supposed to be inclusive. The conversation never happened. These are obviously security-featured devices, but to put them in like a Trojan horse and have a private public partnership, who is the city turning our data over to? This is the big discussion we're having. As we're discussing Facebook and Twitter and Roger McNamee, the musician from Moon Alice, you know, he wrote that book Zooked regarding data and Facebook selling all our private data. Here's devices that will lift your data from you. Nobody has the user agreement in front of them when they allow one of these devices to use their phone. And next thing you know,
so how do the devices work? Explain how the device works, because I see that there's a display, at least one display a block away, but I don't understand. What is it? What do you do to it? How do you key into it?
I don't know. Nobody does either.
Nobody knows.
It seems to, and there's going to be like 38 of these digital monstrosities on each corner of Berkeley, and the mayor apparently has some deal with the company. It's called Ike Smart Kiosks. It's obviously facial recognition could be installed in them, cameras, shot spotters. All of that, on a positive note, is good. But however, what happens if they fall into the wrong hands and that data falls into the wrong hands?
We don't trust J. Edgar Hoover.
The federal government comes into power that is allowed to utilize those and has access to those. It's not if they...
No confidence in our institutions?
Right. It's, maybe we should pause before putting in the infrastructure that can automate fascism based on facial recognition features. And these are the questions that when you start putting technology into the public space, you know, here it is. They just look at this. It could be nothing more organic than us sitting here playing chess, and they cram this digital marketing device next to us to scan all our faces. I don't know how that works. I'm uncertain how the lasers that facially target your face work. You know, this is infrared, UV.
Was there a device they were going to put in on this corner and they didn't? Or?
There is one scheduled to be turned on this corner. It's covered right now. I don't know their intentions. We'd like it to not be. Eventually, this building will be renovated. UC purchased it, I believe. So maybe they'll leave it off till they finish the building.
Right.
I think it's temporary. This, you know, we move the chess tables where we have room to set up.
You may be, should we say, moving to the edge of town soon?
We roll with the punches.
So where is this new device due to be uncovered?
Telegraph and Dwight.
So we're at Telegraph and Dwight. Where is the device? I don't. And you're pointing to this obelisk right here.
Yeah, 2001 Space Odyssey obelisk. Yeah.
Rather unimpressive obelisk, I must say.
That is on the other corner. You can see.
I see
it.
That. Yeah. Has any of these devices been manhandled, vandalized, or otherwise mistreated by the population?
It looks like some of the covers had some, like, spray paint, but I don't, you know, they seem to leave them alone. There are cameras in them, so, you know, most of us enjoy our time here on Telegraph Avenue. I prefer staying here, but the thing is that, you know, you're not going to, you know, challenge that system by beating on the infrastructure. The question is, it would be nice if a judge would step in and say, there really has not been a medical impact study on the people on the sidewalk. You can hear, like if you go down, the exhaust fans on these things are so loud you cannot have a conversation next to them. It's questionable there. You know, normally when we put things like in...
Environmental pollution, sound pollution.
Environmental impact studies. There is, traffic impact studies. This is one of the busiest intersections in Berkeley. Cars coming through here at 45, they've put one next to 4 feet from a red zone curb. You're going to tell me those cars aren't going to slow down to read the sign? And it's not if it's... You know, I won't even say it, but look, like if a car rear ends another car right here where people sit by the sidewalk, nobody's ever thought, you know, look, here we got cars going by at 45. Are they going to stop to see the sign? Is that the intention, to get the car to see the sign? So that means they'll...
A sinister plan, perhaps, to encourage you to move.
I don't think it's thought through that far. It's a company that's in Ohio who is installing these. They work with the Berkeley City Planners, but they know this was going to be a housing building, and it will probably go well with the front of the housing building. You know,
you are very compassionate toward these corporations here.
I don't know that far. I'm not educated on who owns what. I just know that's Ike Smart Kiosk. They are owned by Orange Barrel Media, which is a major media company. So
I know very little about Orange Barrel. What is Orange Barrel's claim to fame?
It's a media company. They sell advertising.
No, nothing.
It's an advertising network for digital signage advertising. Who doesn't need a map?
Now, can your project
lose our way?
Yes. Can your project be found, the Chess Corner, online at all? If people want to, I don't know, give you distant support because they can't make it up to Berkeley and they haven't got the balls to start their own Chess Corner.
We take it one day at a time. You know, it's just, none of that.
You've been doing this for about a year now?
Mm-hmm.
This particular corner?
Yeah, this corner about a year. The other corner, we're over there for about a year. Many years in the park. I'd like to go play chess in the park again, but
we can stalk into the park with you and I and play chess together.
Yeah, absolutely, it's there. You know, if those that want to brave it, but you never know. People are on multiple substances, and so you have to keep your wits about you. It's hard to stare at a chessboard,
and also stare at the real world. It could be a good exercise.
People are unpredictable when they're on narcotics and amphetamines, and anyone that fools themselves and thinks they can sit around People's Park safely is ridiculous.
When they're on UCB wages or when they're on Pentagon salaries or whatever.
Yeah, well, you know.
You seem more predictable, but you never can tell.
You can never tell.
I think you've done a fine job of answering my caustic comments. Anything that we haven't covered you want to talk about that you think you want you proceed if you want.
If you look at like really what it, there's some a little bit some links there, you know, the displacement of the free space of People's Park. That is public space. Public space on the sidewalks that would normally be benches, water fountains. These things are civil infrastructure. These are your civil rights. These civil rights are tied to civil infrastructure. Your right to assemble in public, to be seen. The thought that that commercial interests somehow through our city councils are able to commercialize free space. The thought that I might sit in public and exercise my free mind playing chess without the thinking of spending money.
Imagine that.
You know, so to have seating is important for people to meet and exchange information.
Again.
Telegraph.
So you are one of the de facto revolutionaries here, is attempting to reclaim some of the civil rights of the past that have been lost, along with the benches and the right to be free from neon signs that may take your data.
We're selling free space.
You're giving away free space.
These digital signage kiosks.
You're selling it.
Right there. They've taken that from the public, and anywhere around it is not really where you would want to relax and have a cup of coffee. Let's just say across the street from two coffee shops, it's not conducive to community relaxation or like those sorts of things. We start selling the free space to commercial interests. It's a slippery slope when commercial interests can say who can be here.
And you're hoping that a judge at some point will say, hold everything! There may be environmental effects. Let's just stop all this for the moment. You are quite an idealist, I must say.
I'm not a lawyer, but it shouldn't take one to notice that the mayor and the city council moved through with a contract they had not read the user agreement for, which to me
mob of angry citizens would do that than a judge whose position is, he dependent upon political favors and who does not want to rock the boat and who may be looking for higher offices or for the higher offices for his daughter or whatever.
I'm no expert on how that stuff works.
I'm not either.
There was a company that said, hey, we have these really cool machines, and if you guys need them, we'll give them to you and give you some advertising money, I believe, is part of the deal. But that's all okay. But to just do it without anybody, Moe's the business owners, that none of their people in their store, their union knew about these things going, and none of these business owners even knew about it. And to me, it's just amazing that a mayor can move through and make decisions this quickly during a pandemic.
They will, unless the community stops them. I'm afraid that's the reality.
Right. I voted for Aidan Hill.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with local Berkeley politics, except I have, you know, I was arguing with, you know, Carol Denny, the Pepper Spray Times. You ever seen the? No, Pepper Spray Times is a, if you look at the Berkeley Daily Planet, which used to be a newspaper around town, and probably it doesn't reach up to Telegraph much anymore, but it's a satirical thing. She has similar criticisms of the commercialization of space. Not so much focused on. I don't think she's mentioned this one. Maybe she has, this kiosk situation, but.
Aidan Hill's been doing the homework on it. He was the only person that spoke against it at the city council meeting, and they approved the final installation. And
was he actually on the city council, or was he simply a private citizen?
He spoke as a private citizen.
And good for him.
He's a graduate professor at Cal. So, you know, he was a mayoral candidate. He did get 13% of the vote in Berkeley. I believe he's running for District 7 city council seat. That's this district, Telegraph, the university. He's a Green Party candidate.
Safe People's Park,
Green People's Park. One would question, why has there been no infrastructure improvements on People's Park in nearly 20 years? This is redlining. It's not only redlining the park, but the neighborhood around it. You notice they slowly acquire the housing and the buildings around People's Park. So if they know their intention is to acquire block by block, they've used People's Park as a stage to redline the neighborhood, redline the commercial district. Removing benches from a commercial district decreases the value of it.
You're doing what you can to slow down that redlining a little, at least at this corner.
The best that we can do.
And we have been talking with?
Jesse.
Thank you, Jesse. You're going to be here at the corner of Dwight and Telegraph often during the day and frequently during the night, at least until about midnight or something?
Yeah, I'm around.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
This song is called Santiago. On September 11, 1973, a military coup was launched in Chile. The leader of the coup, General Augusto Pinochet, was a proud fascist with CIA training, like most of his officers. The coup followed a CIA-facilitated campaign of destabilization of the popularly elected socialist government of Salvador Allende, the same sort of destabilization campaign that would see the ouster of the popularly elected Australian government of Gough Williams 2 years later. In the years following the coup in Chile, thousands would be killed, thousands more tortured.
As I looked out my window at the clear blue sky, at the planes that flew so low, at the smoke that rose so high, the air filled up with dust that blackened out the sun, and the politicians went on about the new day that had begun. And when I looked at my calendar, I knew it would be so. It was on this day in Santiago. Less than 30 years had passed, and how clearly I remember what the city had been like before that day in September. There were doctors on the sidewalks helping those in need, students in the barrios teaching children how to read. There were milk trucks in the shanties driving to and fro on this day in Santiago. tell you about the rallies, the whole city in the street. The president was speaking and we all were on our feet. Allende was the future, destitution was the past. The city was in motion and things were changing fast. Just how fast they were changing, only Kissinger could know. On this day in Santiago, Anaconda Copper and Nixon got their dream. A country torn apart, ruptured at the seam. A fascist coup was what they wanted, and that's just what they'd get when they sent down from Fort Benning General Pinochet. Lady Liberty hung her head down low on this day in Santiago. They dropped bombs on La Moneda with jet planes from D.C. They killed 5,000 people in our city by the sea. A reign of terror started when they cut off Victor's hands. The rivers clogged with bodies and our blood drenched the sands. And I remember wondering which way future winds might blow on this day in Santiago.
So now we're going to play part of a flashback to, this is the audio portion of a community TV show called Voices from the Village. It was in December of 1998, and the participants included a conservative, Robert DeFreitas, David Silva, a Green Party activist, Eleanor Foresta, Chris Merrill, a student, a peace activist named Antoinette No Guns Radici, and then City Council member Tim Fitzmaurice, who began as a progressive but on the homeless issues quickly turned to the right when he went into power after being elected in 1998. The moderator was a man named Joe Grossman, and here's the audio soundtrack or some of it.
A great deal of time in the elected officials and people who themselves are homeless, as well as members of the community. We're not just going to be talking about homelessness and looking for your phone calls. We're going to be talking about what is being done to address the situation. Is enough being done? What more can we do? We're very pleased this evening to have with us a number of guests from the community, and I'd like to introduce you to our guests. Later on, we'll be taking your phone calls. Tim Fitzmaurice, City Council member, thank you for joining us very much. Eleanor Foresta, thank you for being with us here today, a citizen of Santa Cruz. No Guns, longtime activist in many causes. We're very pleased to have you with us. Thank you. Robert DeFreitas, thank you for joining us. You're with the Downtown Neighbors Association. We appreciate you making time to be here this evening. And David Silva, thank you very much for being here. You're the outreach coordinator for the Committee to Repeal the Sleeping Ban. And Chris Merrill, a student at UCSC who had his own unique experience with the university police force and with some rangers here around town. I want to thank all our guests for being with us here. I'm Joe Grossman, my co-host tonight, Charlie Phillips, who's been instrumental in putting the show together. Thank you all very much. I'd like to start off with a general question to you. What do you think we're doing, or should I say, are we doing enough, or what more can we do to address the homelessness issue here in Santa Cruz? Does anyone want to take that question?
Well, I'll start by saying that one of the things that we haven't done in a long time is really had a open community dialogue on certain sections of the ordinance, the sleeping sections, and the human rights issues. We haven't had a really open community dialogue on that. And as far as what to do about that and how it affects the camping ordinance and how it impacts the communities and the neighborhoods and businesses, we began a process this December 8th of coming together and exchanging ideas and finding out what common ground we have, and it's surprising how much common ground we found.
Anyone else want to comment on? Yes.
Well, I think the dialogue has been good. It's certainly been spirited. There's certainly been several sides to it and all that. But I think... in spite of the fact that Santa Cruz does a great deal for homeless people, I mean, certainly, relatively speaking, certainly more than any city in the county of Santa Cruz by far. I think it's been pointed out many times at the, even at the meeting at City Council the other night on Tuesday, that homelessness is a very, very big issue and a national issue, and it's difficult for a small city to address every single part of that issue, even though I think Santa Cruz has done a pretty good job, and of course there's still work to be done. But I, as far as real progress, I think we've done a lot, but I think there's a heck of a lot more that needs to happen. And then with regard to this, the camping ordinance, as a member of the Downtown Neighbor Association, we've been pretty much against any changes in the ordinance because of the impact on the neighborhoods. And I guess we can get into that a little bit more in a little bit more detail later. But we have some fears about problems that have been created not by the homeless. We've never thought of this as really entirely a homeless issue. But we see a lot of people who, particularly in vehicles, camp in our neighborhood and cause problems. We don't consider these people. Generally, we don't think of them as being homeless, and we don't blame homeless people for the problems in our neighborhood. We look at that issue as much more of a tourist issue, of an issue of people who are passing through and that kind of thing, as opposed to a homeless issue, because it's just not our experience that the homeless are causing a lot of problems downtown.
Yeah, I think
I want to hear from some other people before you respond.
Sure.
Go ahead.
I was responding, I was adding on.
Okay.
Well, I'd like to say that I think that we can do more, but we can't do more without the whole community really wanting to do more. The more that I want to see happen is an absolute safe place. I want to see the community to say, this is the space that all those that don't fit into a shelter program, those who are homeless by choice, not so much that they chose to be homeless, but there's a lot of things in life that they chose which makes homelessness inevitable. People that live in vehicles, that's a home. We need a place where these homes to be able to park at least for a decent hour in the night. Otherwise, your life falls apart. Your life in a fishbowl. You're constantly being scrutinized. You have no way to do your sanitation easily. Now, it can be done, and there are skills that I'd like to share with people who live in vehicles and people who live in tents and that kind of thing. But until we have a place where we can teach these skills, we go with people who can teach skills, people who know how to give these skills to people, but no place where we could bring people to teach skills and pass them on. So I know we can do more. I don't want us to do it without the community being behind it. And, I'm into these old ways, like Thomas Vinyaki of the Hopi that recently passed. One of the things that we learned from the Hopis, you can't reach consensus as long as one person disagrees. Now, the Hopis operate out of time. We're in time. We're stuck with time. They wait till somebody changes their mind or those people die before they go forward. And I want us to go forward in that spirit. I don't think we have to wait for a whole bunch of people to die, because I think the solution is with us. I think that if we keep this talking, this is, to me, the most exciting part of it, is the depth and the amount of meetings that have been happening over the community. I wish I could have attended all of them. I feel like I've missed a lot of excellent meetings, but I did get to go to a few. And if we keep this up, I would say by next winter, we will have this resolved in a way that's going to feel good community-wide, and we can be a teaching tool for this whole country. I don't want us to resolve this so that everyone feels like they've got to come to Santa Cruz to do something beautiful. I want us to resolve this so we can help this whole country figure out what to do.
Thank you very much.
My position is that in answer to your question, no, we haven't done enough. I don't think we've done anything but do a lot of talking. And I'd like to add a comment on what the three speakers before me said. I don't agree that we've done well, that's David, and then I don't agree I certainly don't agree that it's any group or member of our society's voice should be heard in terms of whether anyone has a night's sleep. This is a basic human right, a basic human need, and no one can vote on it, deny it, comment. No one has an input on it. If you've got some constructive information or input for the city council to take some action, yes. I also disagree with the speaker to my left. In terms of skills, I think that is derogatory. To say that we need to learn how to live, that somehow or other, if you lost your home, you don't know how to do certain things and you're lesser than. And I don't think that anyone chooses things. Well, I think to say also that a person made a wrong choice and that's why they're homeless. Mm-mm. One-third of all American men, and another point I'd like to bring out, too, is I don't want to compare with other cities. This gentleman over here said we're doing better. In other cities, it's legal, so we're not really doing better than others. As far as services, the services are nil compared to the needs. I lost my train of thought there. I just feel that everything that's being said here is going around the real issue. People, through no fault of their own, sometimes become homeless. They're legitimately homeless. Whether it's a divorce that happens, whether it's one of the one-third of homeless men here in Santa Cruz who are disabled veterans, either mentally or physically, whether it's a major contributor to homelessness is the seriously flawed workers' compensation system that allows clear-cut cases to be stonewalled by insurance companies. This is a major cause of homelessness. This brings children, this brings women, and also another factor, the college students and the small children. My basic feeling is that no one has the right to vote on someone else's sleep, and no one has the right to judge a person because they lost their home. And Santa Cruz is doing nothing over the issue but talking. There's a lot of money out there. During November, December, and January, Washington appropriated nearly $1 billion, and maybe a little more, dollars to combat homelessness. That money is there for us. In President Clinton's own words in January, after the first $850,000 was appropriated, when he added another $150,000.
$150 million,
thank you. It was $150 million. He said that every American should have a home. We're committed to end homelessness in America. And, of course, we'd like to see the things that caused it to change, too. That's my position. The city of Santa Cruz is not doing their part.
Thank you. Anyone else want to comment on the initial question?
I would.
Yes, Chris.
I feel that the attitude towards homelessness needs to change in general, that it is a basic human right, and it's also a very viable option that many people believe is a very simple, healthy lifestyle. And, you know, I think everyone should be able to live off the land. I think homeless campgrounds are a very good idea. We have plenty of land here in Santa Cruz. To start something like that, it would be very innovative. Something like the Homeless Garden Project, you know, started here. I feel like sleeping in a car is a very viable option. There's plenty of parked vehicles around our city. I don't see what difference it makes if people are in there during the wee hours of the night sleeping. And I think we really have solutions to homelessness. You know, we don't all need homes to live in. Some people believe it's not very natural to live in homes, especially tract homes that are right next to each other, and people hide in their own little worlds. I think people that are very active and busy during the day, it's fine to have a sleeping spot, either in nature or in your vehicle. And from time to time, there are many of us who can't rent or for certain periods of time, or just don't want to or can't for long periods of time. So in any case, I don't think there are any very many problems either with parking vehicles. Like you said, I don't see any problems that would be very different than any of the regular problems that occur in cities that don't have to do with homelessness. So I think it's more just people's attitudes. They see someone outside parking in their neighborhood, and they've been trained to think that that is wrong or of a lower. They don't respect that, basically. So they are. I think people's political attitude needs to change in this town. There's a lot of people choosing to live in their vehicles, and I think that should be something to work on.
Chris, would you like to relate your experience you had with the fight with your
I'm a student trying to finish up at UC right now and trying to catch up on bills this quarter. I was back in my bus, and I have a VW bus because I, for that reason, from time to time, I like to live in that and not pay rent, because I figure paying rent is throwing your money away, and the way rental situations are in our country now, especially in Santa Cruz, I think we all need to wake up to the reality of the future, and that renting is not always the only option, and it can't be, because renting is only for the landlords, and I think it's a lot of the homeowners that would feel that people should be able to sleep in their cars or sleep anywhere, which I would think would be a human right, since humans need to sleep, obviously, no matter what situation they're in. I also feel that the city should, if they want to do something to help out the homeless, they should put more trash cans around, maybe recycle bins, and so there's not broken glass everywhere, and maybe have more public restrooms around. And
well, I'm ready to start responding to some of them.
Oh, good.
I'd be glad to respond.
Well,
I don't want to interrupt the flow.
Go ahead.
Because I have some. I just want to say that, you know, you can see the breadth of the problem and the situation, that the differences in attitudes and the need, and unfortunately, perhaps for some, the need to talk about it, the need to open up a discussion. And I'm very happy to open up that discussion. But when Chris suggests, for instance, that we need more recycling bins, you know, the city has to pay for whatever it does, and it costs money, you know.
Okay, well, not recycling per se, but just trash.
I want to let each person.
Let's assume though.
Even
that,
if they're elected.
Yeah, even elected. what I wanted to say, just in defense of property owners or something, and of which I haven't paid any property taxes in my life except through rent so far. Uh-huh. In my whole life. And so I'm speaking for people that, whose lives, you know, they can probably speak for themselves, but when they pay for sewer and water and taxes on property, they pay for all the services that you're talking about, for instance. And so when people decide to impact the neighborhood...
On public land and the public street?
People who pay those various fees, like the sewer, those kinds of things, or for the recycling center at the... you know, down on Daimyo Lane, down, you know, 3 miles north of the city. Those are things that we actually have to collect fees for, and things that we collect a fee for everybody's garbage can or something.
But you know, Tim, you know, we collect a fee from all of Live Oak for them to be able to have our water.
Right.
And the problem that we're not facing, and there is sure a national problem, but there really is these sub-regional problems of the towns like Santa Cruz that are the harbor, the bay, the main city, or the county seat, end up having to share to take the most of the weight of the entire county. I think what Michael Hernandez said about fair share is very, very important, because that's where we're going to find most of our solutions, the way the grants are coming down, the counties, the way things are coming down. We really have to make sure that we start the county fair share program as soon as possible. We have to force Watsonville and Scotts Valley and Capitola and the county all to the table. During this task force process, the worst amount of information and the least amount of information was from the county representatives. Health services was very good, but HRA gave us a laundry list of services that if you took it to the homeless services center, people would laugh at those being anything that they could use. The county was not coming forth with them from Veterans Affairs. The county did not participate in this process, so we're unable to solve a lot of problems in terms of service.
What is the story there from the city point of view?
The county's involvement?
About the county's involvement?
Well, I mean, obviously what the city wants to do is work with the county and try to increase its involvement, and I think actually we've made some progress in that regard, and actually we're talking with people about that, but we can't compel the county in some respects. We can only look at what we can do, as insufficient as the city is. For instance, our general funds, the money that we can spend on all projects, including police and fire and everything else, is $30 million. The cost of rebuilding just the overpass at 117 is $31 million.
Yeah,
in other words,
it's
state money. No, it's not. We're not spending that. I'm saying that these regional areas, you know, these regional governments, the Regional Transportation Commission, of which I'm a member, and the state, and Caltrans and whatever, these people are spending a lot of money. We have a very small amount of money in order to spend
money
on these
issues.
Can I ask a question? Do you know the figure of how much is being spent on the total package of the land and the loss of revenue and the expense for our new precinct?
You're asking a difficult question. What exactly are you?
I want the whole cost. We're talking about not having money, and I'm really...
You're talking about the new
precinct?
Police headquarters?
Yeah, that is so large. I'm wondering
what is the cost of the new...
I think it's about $10 million.
$10 million. I think it might be more than that, actually.
And I believe they get that from other funding and things like that. I mean, it's not coming out of our pockets specifically or out of the general fund specifically. It's something that's done based on FEMA money and a variety of other things. After the earthquake, we were allowed to rebuild and all that. But you're right. You're absolutely right. Where do the resources of government go? I was thinking about this all day.
I think about
rebuilding a freeway interchange for $30 million and not being able to address essential human